Okay, so eliminating mixed asymptotics and obstacle type free boundary problems. Paper submitted to Communications and PD, which you can get off my Rutgers website, which is still up, so you really don't need to take any notes, even if you are interested. Okay, so I'm going to discuss a pair of problems. So the first problem I refer to as Barry White's drum problem. Barry White was famous for having a deep voice. In any case, I want to create a membrane with prescribed shape and mass out of two given materials with different densities in such a way that the fundamental frequency of the resulting membrane is minimized. Make the drum beat with as low a frequency as possible. This problem is studied in a pair of papers with Segun Chinillo and some collaborators. Okay. And in any case, they show that the following math problem is slightly more general than the physical problem I've just described. And so let me say, in terms of thinking, if the top of your drum is going to be a disc, this problem is going to be exceptionally boring. So the top of your drum you should think of as being some odd shape. Okay, so you have some odd closed curve in the plane, and you want 60% one rubber, 40% a different rubber, arranged in such a way that you minimize first eigenvalue. You might think, oh, maybe the rubbers will mix together. They don't. Okay. Okay. Okay, so in any case, here's what the physical problem translates into, and I suppose instead of rubber now you have to think nylon. Anyway, omega is a subset of the plane, which is bounded, connected, and has a Lipschitz boundary. Alpha is greater than zero, and A is an area, and they're given. And little lambda is the minimum eigenvalue of PDE I've written down. And capital lambda is what happens when you minimize little lambda. This chi sub d is the characteristic function of d. Okay, so the question is, how do you arrange d? How do you arrange the two different rubber slash nylon slash whatever it is in such a way to minimize this eigenvalue? Okay. And in terms of this characteristic function d, I think I said d is where you have one material, d complement is the other. And the first result is that d will end up being a level set of the eigenfunction. And if it's not, or d is where u is less than some value. And if that doesn't work, then you can sort of use a Rayleigh quotient type characteristic characterization of the first eigenvalue, rearrange where you have your set, and get an improvement on what the first eigenvalue is. Okay, so basically, if you really have optimized things, then your d will be exactly at where your eigenfunction is less than a certain value t, and d complement will be where you're greater than that. The same people, more or less, prove that the boundary of the two things is real analytic wherever grad u is non-zero, wherever the gradient of the eigenfunction is not zero. In any case, so I've been studying what happens if and when grad u is zero. And I suppose a long-term goal is to classify these things out of existence. But suffice to say, I can certainly say a lot if they do exist. and I think I'm pretty close to actually classifying them out of existence. Okay, now another problem which is not related, except in ways I'll point out in a moment, comes from inverse potential theory. It's studied by Caffarelli, Karp, and Shigolian, Shigolian, Earl Tseva, and myself, and Henrik Shigolian. Okay, and what do I assume that you're given? I assume you're given a continuous function f that's positive, and a function w and a domain in B1, the ball, but in Rn, which satisfies the following equation. It satisfies that Laplace w is the characteristic function of omega times f in the unit ball, and w and its gradient vanish on the complement of omega. Okay, so you have a region where w and its gradient vanish, and then you have a region where the Laplacian of w is f, and the fact that you're satisfying that PDE in all of B1 means that they connect smoothly, means that the gradient vanishes at the interface. Now, if w is greater than or equal to 0, then this situation arises in the obstacle problem. And I don't want to get into that because of the nature of this talk. I want to assume that w is allowed to change sign in the region omega. Okay? In any case, in the case where w is greater than or equal to 0, you can show that it's quadratically bounded as you move away from a point of the interface. If w is allowed to change sign, then you can't, and that's going to be important to me. Okay, and how does it arise with the no sign assumption? It arises in inverse problems where you specify Dirichlet and Neumann data, take a difference of two putative solutions to your inverse problem, and then you automatically vanish outside. You can extend to be zero outside the domain you were in, and you now satisfy this PDE. Okay, and Beretta and Vogelius have a series of papers on an inverse problem that doesn't quite lead to this, but with a little bit of poetic license will lead to something incredibly close. Now, if F is Lipschitz, Caffarelli, Karp, and Shigolian can use monotonicity formula of Alt, Caffarelli, Friedman, or if that would be if F was constant, or if F is merely Lipschitz, they can use the newer monotonicity formula of Caffarelli, Jerison, and Koenig to get a quadratic bound. And now, okay, now we get to sort of the common ground of these two problems and this quadratic bound that I keep alluding to. Okay, so what's the common ground of both problems? Well, that you have a Laplacian of something in L infinity. And L infinity is kind of nasty in that regard, in that you don't quite get sort of the W2 infinity estimates. You don't get C11 estimates. Okay, there's this pesky log term that sits around. At the same time, these problems have this scaling where you want to do a quadratic scaling. You want to look at epsilon to the negative 2, W of epsilon x, because that sort of preserves the problem. And that way, you'd want to take a sequence of those things, converge to a limiting solution, sort of a global solution of your problem, but without a quadratic bound, you don't have compactness. Okay, now, okay, so what have we got? We've got Laplacian in L infinity, W and its gradient vanishing at the origin, a certain non-degeneracy, which sort of says that you're going to grow at least quadratically, eliminating sort of cubic growth or something like this. Okay. Now there's some related work of Georg Weiss and Nina Earl Tseva on the two-phase obstacle problem, which looks a lot like, in terms of the assumptions, some of what I have here, but in fact their assumptions are a little bit complementary to mine, something I was very glad to find out at some point because found out about it after I had done this. Okay, and so what am I going to do? I'm going to do a sort of divide and conquer by the asymptotics. In these problems, there are three possibilities. First possibility is that there is a quadratic bound. Two and three are possibilities that there aren't. Three says that no matter what sequence of radii you zoom in on, you always blow up worse than r squared. Okay. In a mixed asymptotic case, it says that, well, there's a sequence of radii converging to the origin where there is a quadratic bound on that sequence of radii, but then there's an interlacing sequence where there is not, where if you divide by r squared on the interlacing sequence, you'd blow up. Okay? And I'm going to refer to cases 2 and 3 as being superquadratic cases. Okay, and we want to do a blow-up, and the blow-up, of course, has to depend upon which case you're in. If you are quadratically bounded, then you can blow up in the usual epsilon to the negative 2 W epsilon X way. Okay. But also, I'd like to eliminate the mixed case. I'd like to eliminate the possibility of having a quadratically bounded sequence and a non-quadratically bounded sequence. Okay, so... And in the cases where I have a sort of case one versus case three, the blow-ups are typically going to look different. For the drum problem, I'll show you what I get. They get two very different pictures. And that way you can sort of do say that the interlacing sequence can't exist. Okay, and there are three ingredients to doing this. Okay, so first, a theorem due to myself and Henrik Shigolian. Assuming that W of 0 is grad W of 0, 0, Laplace W is less than or equal to C, and W is superquadratic, which means that you sort of do have the pesky log term around, or you have a sequence where when you divide by R squared and rescale, you go to infinity. Then there exists, and this is the annoying part of this theorem, there exists a sequence, rho j converging down to 0, and there exists a sequence of real numbers, so that if you rescale along those radii, you will get convergence to a non-trivial homogeneous harmonic polynomial of degree 2 on Rn. Now, of course, the non-trivial point is the biggest point. I guess the thing to always think about here are sequences like r to the n sine n theta, which are sequences of harmonic functions where the L infinity norm on the disk is normalized to be 1, but as you scale, or as you let n go to infinity, you converge quite nicely to 0, which isn't going to be a contradiction for anything. And of course, those aren't rescalings of the same function, but you can imagine things where those would be close to rescalings of the same thing. Okay, and the bad news, again, is that you can't the rho j can't be anything. They come from a sort of first-time argument. And, okay, so I better move along quickly here. And that sort of gives you a blow-up for the superquadratic cases, okay? And in the case of the drum problem, that blow-up gives you basically x squared minus y squared. Okay. The next thing you need is a change of variables in theorem, which in the quadratic case is essentially due to Spruck. In a paper on population biology in 1983. And the same type of thing was discovered again by Georg Weiss without the change of variables. Okay, so I'm looking at the following change of variables, psi of s theta, which is w of r theta divided by r squared, where s is minus log r. And assume similar stuff for the Laplacian, and then assume this structure condition, which is really a crux of a lot of what goes on. Okay, that psi s squared is in L2. Psi s is in L2. Okay. And assume there's a sequence rho j converging down to 0, where we've got a quadratic bound, and where the gradient has a nice bound. Now, Okay, so in terms of the quadratic bound of the function, which I've circled in blue, and in terms of the red bound here and the previous structure conditions, one of the points with these problems is that I can derive the structure condition, and in fact this bound, more or less from this quadratic bound in blue if I allow myself a little bit of slack using just a little bit of rescaling and elliptic regularity. Now, okay, going back to the this bound, let me give you a flavor of how you'd derive this structure condition from this type of quadratic bound. Well, in terms of the change of variables where I have s equal to minus log r, you want to do a separation of variables without actually separating variables. And the point is that the Laplacian and polar coordinates, when you have your sort of separation of variables, would give you an Euler equation in R. And this logarithmic change of variables takes your Euler equation to a constant coefficient equation. Once you have a constant coefficient equation, you've got a psi sub ss, a psi s, and a psi, and then a psi theta theta. Multiply everything through by psi s, sort of an ODE trick, and integrate, and use the fundamental theorem of calculus a lot, and integration by parts, okay, and make use of this quadratic bound. Integrate only out to the right radii where you have that quadratic bound. Okay. And the blow-ups that you get now for the drum problem are in some sense incompatible. Okay, you've got an x squared minus y squared in the superquadratic cases, where 50% of the time you're positive and 50% of the time you're negative. And in the other case, you make use of the whole psi s squared being finite and blow up and get something along these lines. And I guess the finiteness of the psi s squared leads you to the fact that the blow-ups are going to be homogeneous, which makes your life really simple because you get r squared f of theta, which is, you know, you'll have an ODE. And you do a little simple stuff with your ODE and derive the fact that you get three regions where it's positive, three regions where it's negative, and of course I've shifted by that original t from the level set. Okay, so three regions where it's more than t and three regions where it's less than t. And these positive regions, when you add up their areas, strictly less than 50%. And so now the idea is, okay, you've got, in the mixed case, a blow-up where you get, let's say, 40% positivity, and a blow-up where you get 50% positivity. Take a blow-up along an interlacing sequence where it's only 45% of the time positive, and it won't satisfy either. Okay, but there's a gap in that argument. Now, the gap in that argument is that if you remember that first blow-up result of myself and Shigolian, you're given that sequence by a first-time argument. You can't just pick a random sequence. And there's nothing right there that tells you that it couldn't be going to zero. And, well, zero is a perfectly good harmonic function. Okay, so you need some sort of statement that it can't converge to zero. Okay, so here I say, what if the interlacing blow-up is zero? Theorem, it isn't. Okay, and in fact, if it doesn't have a quadratic bound, then it must converge to a non-trivial harmonic homogeneous polynomial of degree 2. And the proof is fairly simple, and it uses, again, that structure the structure condition that psi s squared integrates over L2 is finite. Okay, so without loss of generality, I'll assume that Tj satisfies this type of estimate, which is sort of saying, okay, there's no quadratic bound in an L2 sense. Okay, and now I'm going to renormalize by Lj. And of course, here the problem is, what if the norm concentrates on the boundary of the ball? Okay, I'm going to normalize so that the L2 norm is fixed, and I don't want this concentration happening at the boundary of the ball. So the worst case scenario is it does. But even if it does, I get convergence to some harmonic function in C1 alpha on any compact set. And so now I'm just going to assume that it converges to a function that's identically zero. Okay, and that the concentration does happen so that I get zero. Okay, so first of all, the mass of the L2 norm of Wj moves to the boundary of V1. There's my concentration happening. And if the mass of my L2 norm, if my L2 norm is fixed to be 1 by this normalization, and it's all moving with, and whilst keeping L2 norm 1, it moves to the boundary, then the supremum better get arbitrarily large. Okay, so the supremum gets arbitrarily large as you approach the boundary. In spite of all of this, these Wj's satisfy a Poisson equation where the right-hand side, at least in L infinity norm, is independent of the J. The L infinity norm is going to shrink. Okay, it's going to go to zero. But I'm just going to say, okay, it's bounded by some constant. It goes to zero because the original assumption said it was superquadratic, this sequence. So you'd be dividing by more than what you need. Okay? Okay, so I say, though, that these satisfy this Poisson equation on all of B5. Okay? Or I normalized on B1, but that doesn't mean that these things don't exist on a larger set. I mean, after a couple scalings, they exist on an arbitrarily large ball. Okay, but so if the supremum at the boundary of the ball is getting large, and you satisfy a Poisson equation, then the L2 norm on a ball centered on your boundary where the thing gets large is getting very big. And you have this picture. Here's where it gets big. The L2 norm on this ball has to be really big. Meantime, the L2 norm on all of this is fixed to be 1. So in here, your L2 norm is small. And on here, your L2 norm is huge. And now you look at the psi again. And the psi, which was basically W divided by R squared, as long as your R is away from 0, as long as you don't look at this little ball around the origin, your psi is comparable to your W. So what do you have? You have the L2 norm of your psi j is small on B1 minus B1 half, the image of that, and it's huge on B5 minus B1, the image of that. On the other hand, the psi js is tiny. And I guess the final observation to make is that Sobolev inequalities require a whole gradient of your thing to be bounded. Poincaré does not. It just requires a little bit of cooperation of the geometry. Okay, and so in any case, the geometry works here so that this gives you a contradiction because your radial derivative in L2 is as small as you like after all this rescaling, and you go from having a tiny L2 norm on one annulus, on the annulus that contains this part, to a huge L2 norm out here. Okay, and that gives you the contradiction.